Hello everyone, this is Louis Vargas, and you're listening to episode 46 of the Art Scene Podcast. We're about 4 weeks into the COVID-19 pandemic here in the U.S., and since the Bay Area has had to self-quarantine. A lot has happened since then, of course, with many businesses being closed and people losing their jobs, and the economy has taken a hit. Unfortunately, the art world was not immune to the effects of the pandemic either. Specifically here in the Bay, museums and art spaces have closed, meaning exhibitions and events are postponed. Nonetheless, there are many people who are forging on, including me in this podcast. So for the next few episodes, you'll hear various members of the art community talk about how the quarantine has affected them and how they plan to adapt. That being said, our guest today is Clea Masiani, an old friend of mine from grad school and actually the very first guest of the podcast. And now today she works for Creativity Explored as the curator and exhibitions coordinator. And you'll hear us talk about what changes are happening here in the Bay Area, the type of programming and events that Creativity Explored does. So without further ado, here's our conversation. How's it going? How's we're like in week four of the quarantine. How are you doing? Are you most of the time in your apartment, or do you get to go out and walk?
I will say that I'm respecting the shelter in place order pretty well. I get really stressed out when I go to the supermarket now. So I'm trying to stay indoors as much as possible, and then eventually when it gets too crazy inside, going for a walk or short run outside is always good. I'm lucky enough that it leaves close by the Twin Peaks and, you know, some nice kind of walks. So it's pretty great. Except that there's a ton of people. So
I know. Surprisingly a lot of people on my walks.
Yeah. It gets to a point where the walk is just avoiding people. Yeah. And then it kind of loses the charm of it.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to talk about a few things. Mm-hmm. I mean, the last time I talked to you, you were still working at SFAI in the alumni department.
Right.
But you've moved on since SFAI, and you now work at Creativity Explored, right?
I do, yeah.
But before we get into the nitty-gritty of what you do at Creativity Explored, I wanted to ask, because you're also still the co-owner / co-founder of Boston Rainer Gallery over at the Minnesota Street Project. And so I wanted to know, you know, from your end, how the gallery and the gallery hat that you have, how this quarantine has affected the way you guys run the gallery.
Well, as I think everybody else, we had to rethink a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So we started like Instagram Live postings with artists that we were collaborating while it was happening. And right now we actually just kind of opened a new show, except that it's not physical, it's just online. Mm-hmm. And so we're presenting the work and people have the opportunity to buy it, obviously. And so far it's actually pretty, pretty interesting how people are responding, because I think people are excited to see new stuff in this kind of weird time. So we've been selling a few pieces already, and it's a good thing to see happening, to see also that there's support from our community, because obviously it's a complicated time for artists specifically, and art nonprofits, organizations. And as you probably know, Boston Rainer has always kind of been we're a for-profit gallery, but we're really acting as a nonprofit sometimes. Mm-hmm. So it's been, you know, it always is challenging, but you know that we won't be able to reopen for a while. We don't know, honestly, if we're ever going to be able to have an opening this year again, because, you know, let's say the shelter in place is left or removed. Do we get together again, crowds of like 20 people or more, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of unpredictable elements that we're kind of like, we're trying to keep on going in the best way we can. And we do have shows planned out. So, you know, those shows are going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to be smart.
Does it seem like everything is just like, you're still keeping the schedule of exhibitions, but just like pushing it back, like whatever, how many months this is going to last us?
Yeah, pretty much. It's a little bit of a bummer, obviously, but I mean, it's a very privileged thing to say. It's like, oh, it's such a bummer. But no, we had shows that were tied up to specific events. For instance, one particular that I have in mind was supposed to be tied up to the SF Art Book Fair.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, we don't even know if the Art Book Fair is going to happen. I mean, it's not canceled right now, but it's uncertain. So things like that. But again, it's a privilege to say that we're still having a space. The Rapoports, Andy and Deborah, have been really, really proactive into trying to find solutions for Minnesota Street Project to evolve and go potentially fully digital, which is very exciting to see that there is not only support of the community, but support of our founders for, you know, the greater good.
Yeah. So speaking of, you know, the art community getting affected and how they're getting affected, I figured we might as well just talk about it. One of the biggest blows here in the Bay Area is the longtime art school here in the Bay, the San Francisco Art Institute, the school that both you and I attended, announced that they're closing and they're not going to reopen. They're not going to take this financial hit very well, and they're not going to have a new school year next year. And, you know, as of now, they haven't really been said if it's a definite closure or a temporary closure. They haven't really been that communicative on it, of course. But, you know, I wanted to get your point of view on it, because I know you work there, so you understand the little inner workings of that institution. But, I mean, your first reaction to that, like, I mean...
First reaction to that crappy email that sent updates.
Yeah, they just sent a mass email to all the alums, like, oh, by the way, we've been having financial problems and we're not going to open.
Oh, you think it's all the alums? It's everyone.
Yeah.
That's what is pretty interesting. I don't know if everybody knows that, but that email was not directed necessarily towards the alum. It was directed to the greater community, including the students, the teachers, the staff. And plenty of the teachers were not aware that this was happening. So this is how they find out that they were getting laid off.
Yeah.
Which is such a typical thing for this institution to do. Unfortunately, also, I had the pleasure to work in development for a long time, for a few years at least, not quite a long time, but at SFAI, and I know exactly how bad the situation was and how secretive they were about it, and how you know, they had the fire burning under their ass and somehow decided not to take any action. And it was very unsatisfying to see how poorly managed it was. And of course, it has been for a while. It's not something that it's new. Everybody knows, all generation of alums are aware that the administration has never really done an amazing job.
Yeah.
And it's also obviously one of the reasons I left, because eventually you can only witness so much. And when you're like waving a really big red flag, people are telling you're crazy and then you should shut up about it. So eventually it gets really frustrating. Yeah, the obvious answer is it's just really sad and infuriating in many ways. So those were my two initial feelings. And, but I have a weird feeling that this is not the end, because I honestly don't see how this could be the end. It can't be like a shitty story like this. I think it has potential to grow into something else. The only thing that we have to keep in mind, whatever it's going to be next, it's not going to be the thing that we knew. And people are going to have to accept that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I mentioned both of us went to school there, so I mean, you have the unique perspective of knowing how it was to be a student there and then also how to be an employee there and the frustrations mm-hmm. and delights, you know, on both sides. But, you know, I mean, I even remember when we were going to school, there was, you know, you and I were in the exhibition and curatorial, like, museum studies program that they had there. And, you know, that kind of slowly disappeared, even as we were part of that program. But, you know, it's weird because what I love about that school was it was such a close-knit community. The professors were always great, right? The people we met were always amazing. And it's an insane that that still existed despite the mismanagement of the school. And yeah. And as you mentioned, like over, you talked to older alums and they also had very similar experiences, you know, and opinions. And it's interesting that it lasted 150 years that way. And you're right. Like if it lasted 150 years that way, this can't be the end of that story for that school. Like, and they just built that beautiful grad campus on the waterfront in Fort Mason. So it's, I mean, what a waste.
I know. A lot of things is on that line, what a waste. But no, I'm with you. I mean, and everyone will tell you this. It's about the experience you have and it's about the people you met and it's about the teachers you had. No one really cares about the administration at its day. And it's okay because it's also like a very small school, you know. It's like, I mean, obviously they're now smaller than ever because the student attendance dropped phenomenally in the last couple of years. But they, even, you know, at the highest peak, it was probably 700 students, which is really nothing when you think about college.
Yeah.
And so this is how you can keep it really tight and really important. And people, you know, the people there are you're surrounded by matters because they're just tied up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting you made that point, though, that if it did reopen, that it wouldn't be close to what it was before. Because I think you're right, because if it reopened to continue to be the way it was before, I feel like it'll just be a mess again, right?
Yeah, exactly. What's the point?
Right.
Like everybody hates, I remember as a student and as a staff, I was dreaming of burning down everything and just starting over again. And it feels like right now they have the opportunity to do it because it's such a mess anyway. So might as well just start over.
Yeah.
The only problem is like, there are two options. Option number one is like somebody with the big bucks comes in, buy it, and this kind of spirit that people are always talking about will die.
Right.
And something else will come up from that.
Yeah.
But, you know, this spirit is not going to be there anymore, which, again, change is fine, you know. It's not a big deal. Or option number two, it becomes like what it was supposed to be, a tiny liberal arts college that is probably like a co-op run or some sort.
Right.
And you know, no one makes money out of it. Students are not really getting a real degree, but they're going there because of like the spirit, actually. And that could work too. That could be an interesting, you know, system since, I mean, supermarket can work like that. Why not a school?
That's true. Well, and, you know, the other, I think also, in my opinion, at least, even from my experience of being there, you know, I went there for grad school, but I came from a traditional liberal arts school for undergrad, and it was way more structured than I think the educational system was at SFAI. But the funny thing was, that's what appealed to me to go to SFAI was that it was so different from what my undergrad experience was, that I wanted that experience. And then I remember about halfway through it, I was like, I don't know if this is sustainable. Like, I'm going to school now for 2 years for grad school, but I don't know if I was an undergrad and I had to do this for 4 years, if I could have done that. And I think that's the reason why it is kind of the mess it is that I think they wanted to preserve that. But the thing was, is that I feel like that was the spirit of like of the school like 40, 50 years ago, and it doesn't really fit to today.
Yeah, absolutely. But I also think, my dear friend Emily Reynolds pointed out a couple weeks ago that, you know, they have places in the U.S. like Black Mountain College or, you know, super alternative colleges that are very successful because they're still alternative, because they'll offer a very different kind of thinking and a different perspective. So
yeah.
Maybe Esoterica can go that way, like entirely, since it's not school and a place of creation.
Yeah. Like they could find a balance of keeping that old spirit and then but somehow fix it.
Absolutely.
Like organizationally. Yeah. Right.
But yeah. The bottom line is it seems uncertain that, you know, just because it was once again mismanaged by some person that put again his interests first.
Yeah. Nothing to name, sir.
It doesn't mean that the whole thing is gonna end.
Yeah, that's true. And yeah, I mean, I hope it does, because you and I have our grievances sometimes with that school, but we really love that community there. And
right.
I even now, like, I still love visiting that campus on Chestnut Street.
Absolutely.
There's something about that whole view of the city it has, and overlooking North mm-hmm. Beach and the wharf, and I think that just makes you feel,
yeah, it's inspiring.
Yeah, and for sure.
And I think also the spirit of its guy is like it's beyond the physicality of the space. Also, it's like people have this certain kind of thinking,
yeah,
that comes with it.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, most spaces in the city have been started by alums, art spaces, and for what reason? Because there is this chaotic kind of system there.
Yeah.
That you have to, like, push yourself extra hard,
yeah,
to make things happen. And that's the spirit, you know?
Yeah. And so many people, you know, even as I've done this podcast, and there's some people I've interviewed, and I'm surprised to find out that, oh, you also went to SFAI. You know, that school mm-hmm. has spit out so many different people who have gone on to great things in the art community here in San Francisco, and still continue mm-hmm. to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be a shame if that, like, that pool of people,
yeah,
you know, that just dries up.
No, for now, I mean, the real shame is, like, not knowing, not having a plan on what to do for the students or how to, you know, pay your faculty.
Yeah.
And that's just, like, very, it's disheartening to,
yeah,
to see this happening and just collapsing. And those poor kids that are, like, about to graduate, or, you know, imagine you're, like, a second year master's and your final thesis is coming up. You've been working for it for 2 years. I will, like, be a mess, and I can only imagine how bad they must feel.
Yeah.
Plus the coronavirus on top of everything.
Yeah. Like, yeah. They're not even so many of those students probably had to, like, leave the city and go back to their respective hometowns or whatever. So that's, like, not, like, that sucks. You know, they, in the end, you're not, like, it's not like you're at your dorm or you're still in the city going to school and, like, doing it online. It's like you have mm-hmm. to stay inside and not enjoy the other mm-hmm. aspects of, like, going to school in San Francisco.
Yeah, and I mean, as a former international student, I can only imagine also how stressful this must be for kids that are, like, not even their home country.
Yeah.
Knowing that they might not even be able to go home because there's no more flights. And,
right.
Like, where they're supposed to go, you know? And this is, I mean, this is a mess already, but, like, this is adding up in a way that it's just crazy.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's move on to the next topic now that we've said our piece about that our beloved school.
I'm glad we did.
Yeah. And let's talk about Creativity Explored. So so you mentioned earlier that, so your role is, you're a curator. Is that, like, your official title?
Yeah, my official title is curator and exhibition coordinator.
Okay. And for those who don't, some of the listeners who don't understand what Creativity Explored is, can you explain a little bit of the work that they do?
Absolutely. So Creativity Explored is based in San Francisco, and we are an art center, meaning studio space and art gallery for artists with developmental disabilities. So a little bit of history about Creativity Explored is we were founded almost 40 years ago, 37 and a half exactly, by the Katzes. There were a couple from New York, psychologists, and they decided to start this program on how to mix arts and developmental disabilities in ways that it was really just brand new. This started with Creative Growth in Oakland, which I think is the most well-known center in the U.S. right now. So Creativity Explored and Creative Growth are they're based on the same idea, and they were established by the same people. We're not run by the same people currently, and we depend on different fundings. So Creative Growth is based in Oakland, so they get Oakland money, basically, and San Francisco gets San Francisco money. So that's kind of the main differences. We also have a third sister organization called NIAID in Richmond, and you may have heard about NIAID this year and last year because Marlon Newland, who is a NIAID artist, received the Seeker Award and was included in the Whitney Biennial last year. So a pretty big year for NIAID.
Yeah, no, his work was great. I got to see it recently in that Seeker show.
Isn't it amazing?
It's wonderful. His he's autistic, correct? Is that what his...
Well, so it's something that is interesting, actually, because working at Creativity Explored, we don't really disclose our artists' disabilities.
Right.
And sometimes they have multiple, actually, and sometimes they kind of overlap.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not aware of Marlon's disability.
I think he is only because, and I think we only know because they disclosed it in a news story that they wrote about when he was at the Whitney Biennial. I think that was the only reason why.
That makes sense.
I'm sure,
when you get to that level, people want to know.
Yeah.
But we try to avoid that because there's always the what's wrong with them question, which is quite unsettling and very, based, and we don't really like that.
Well, that's really great because then you really, they're just labeled as artists, not as not as an artist with disability or an autistic artist or whatever it may their disability may be. It's plain and simple, they are an artist who create work and love to create work.
Absolutely, and we work with at Creativity Explored. We work with over 135 artists.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have two locations in the city because our main studio on 16th Street has limited capacity, and we needed to have a second space to host the artists that we're working with. And so our second space is on 16th, it's in Portrero, 16th and Arkansas. And the space is a little more ADA accessible. We have more wheelchairs there. It's also a little more quiet. So it's open to the public, but really there's no one goes there because it's a little more on the private side and there's no gallery space there. So one other thing also that is really interesting in this model is the three organizations are based on the same model, which is you have to have the studio space where artists are creating on a daily basis, but you also have a gallery space where you're showing the art, and the gallery space is your entryway to the studio. So the model that was created back in the 70s is this idea that first you look at the art and then you understand what's going on. And it kind of takes the whole loaded idea of an artist with disability and kind of put art on the forefront, which is something that I really value in general, because it's when you go to a museum show and it's like, oh, it's a museum show and here's this black artist and here's this woman artist. There's also like all sorts of labels that are always important to kind of get because they want to make themselves feel good. And what I'm very interested in is seeing how we can show artists and the artwork from Creativity Explore in settings that are a little more neutral and how people just react to the work itself without necessarily having a loaded idea of what those people are or what they think of, you know, what it looks like.
Well, I mean, you know, it's, I mean, great work comes out of that program. Like I've sporadically seen them around the city, like in individual shows that like certain artists are included in, or I think there was a show at the SFO airport at one point that I saw that was really great work coming out of that program. And it's really cool too, that they're all like, they're all, their studios are in the same place where they get to show their work too, because then they're all close together and they, you know, the funny thing about artists, you know, is that they love to be in studio spaces where they're next door to other artists because they all kind of just feed off each other, right, sometimes. And so it's really great that they're able to have that community as well.
Yeah, it's a very interesting dynamic, actually, in the studio. And I want to encourage everybody in general, I mean, it's a terrible time to say that, but to come visit us whenever we reopen, because unfortunately we're obviously closed. Which I'll get to in a second because it's been quite challenging.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what about the artists who can't go to their studios to go do work? I mean, how are they handling that? Are they able to still continue to do it from home?
Well, yes and no. That's the short answer. The long answer is, of course, so we have instructors that all artists, practicing artists as well, that are kind of supervising tables and not quite classes, but like kind of like supervising the work in the studio and helping some of the artists with their work. And so our instructor has been doing an amazing job to like deliver care packages and kind of supply a package to as many artists as possible so they can like still keep on doing things from their homes and kind of keep up with their practice. But it's extremely challenging. I mean, you have to understand that, you know, out of 135, there's probably like 50% that don't even have access to like a cell phone or internet in general. So it's just, I mean, we have a few artists who have no idea where they are right now. And it's very complicated.
Sure.
And so the moment you understand that, and that kind of reflects on how safe our space is for them, and how it's like it's a cocoon of life, right? Where not only they get to be themselves, they get to do whatever they need to do, and they get to create whatever they want. And the studio is an open space, so all the artists are working kind of like side by side. And then to your point, the gallery in front is actually really interesting because the artist gets to interact with clients directly, you know? When somebody is interested in buying a piece, oftentimes we'll be like, hey, you want to meet the artist? He's in the back. And of course, some are nonverbal and some are not interested in meeting anybody, but some are very interested in chatting about their work and kind of, you know, encountering new people. So it's also something that that is really hard right now for us to not be able to provide that space and that kind of dynamic to those people. Because, you know, some of our artists have been coming and working with us for 35 years plus, like every day. And they're committed to their practice and ways that some of my artist friends are not. So I also think it's an interesting kind of reality clash that I have every day.
Well, and then speaking of, I guess now that, you know, for right now the doors are closed and nobody can visit, and I knew, well, I mean, just by poor timing, of course, I know that there was an actual show that had opened, I think, the week that it was announced that we were going to be closed. right? Yes. This whole city was closing, you know, and I think it was the show was called Of Here, From There, De Aquí, Desde Allá, which was in partnership with Ana Teresa Fernandez. And I think it was an installed show at the, funny enough, that the grad campus for SFAI, right? At the gallery.
Yeah. So actually we had two shows that were canceled that, I mean, at least we got to open that one, and then get shut down pretty much the next day. But, and we had another show curated by Gina Beard from the director of the lab in our studio space, in our gallery space. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, really wrong but interesting timing, the show that Gina curated was entirely digital. So we got lucky enough to be able to offer the show online. So we have part one available on YouTube currently. It's called What We Do, again, curated by Gina Beard, director of the lab, and so it's a series of videos and archives or animations that are not really showcased in as a studio in general, because people always see Creativity Explored artists working with like paintings and drawings, but it turns out that there is a whole lot of use of different media, and that includes digital media. And yeah. So the show was supposed to really kind of point that out to, I don't know, our supporters and the greater audience, but unfortunately we never get to show it.
Mm-hmm.
Part two is coming out on April 16th, again on YouTube. And so it's super entertaining and it's super great. So I encourage everybody to go check it out. It's on our YouTube channel, but you can also go to creativityexplore.org and get a link from there. As for the show at SFAI, that was a really, also really sad moment, because Ana Teresa has been working with Creativity Explored for over a year on that project, and she collaborated with, I think, like 40 artists or so from the studio to kind of tell the story about what home is, and kind of gave her interpretation of their artwork through the show, as well as their story.
Mm-hmm.
And the show was meant to be, you know, kind of a digital base. So there's like mixed media, there's video, there is also performances. So the night of the opening, we had performers being, you know, kind of collaborating with the whole universe that she created. And and then coronavirus happened.
Yeah.
So, but hopefully the idea of the show is should be traveling to other locations in the future. The show was actually a grant from the Kenneth Frankin Foundation, which was a really, really beautiful, I think a beautiful selection from their part. I'm not saying that because I work at Creativity Explored, but I just thought that was a really strong project. And the idea is like to continue showing the work eventually in different locations. So I'm hoping that we get to do that in the future.
Yeah, that's great. You know, I'm curious, as the curator, do you get to work, like, as the curator, are you working and coming up with these ideas for these exhibitions, but then you're working with the people that you work in partnership? Because you mentioned Dina Beard and you mentioned Ana Teresa. So are you working close with them during the production of these shows?
Yeah, so I think an interesting part of my job at Creativity Explored is I create shows, obviously, but I'm trying to bring and to expand as much as possible. So I've been bringing outsider curators to curate shows at least once a year since I started. In general, instructors are actually also curators for the shows, because they know the artists so well, and they've been working with them for so long that they have a really good eye to talk about, you know, what the work is. But I think it's also very interesting to extend and kind of like get other artists involved from the community at large. So Dina was kind of part of that series of like outside curator coming in. Last year, Mildred Howard curated a show for us. And so I think it's a really interesting thing. And also it's good for artists to be able to have a different perspective that is outside of the studio and potentially more exposure as well. Mm-hmm. And as for Anna, I think it's a little different because the outside shows are a little bit like of a mix. Sometimes they include outsider artists. Sometimes, you know, we are included in bigger shows. Sometimes we get to curate our own shows outside. So it kind of depends. But my role is to be as collaborative as possible. I'm also trying to have the artists curate their shows as much as possible because I think it's a kind of opportunity for them to have a different kind of professional development as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
I'm working really closely to all the curators and the artists in general that we're showcasing in and out of the.
Is there anything you're working on during the Corona shutdown? That were like anything in progress?
I'm working on things that are kind of towards the future because unfortunately, I mean, there's a few things that are boiling while the shutdown is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes potentially showcasing on, you know, how artists are working from home.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really trying to focus my time on our future exhibitions. And we do have 2021, at least for now.
Yeah.
has a pretty packed calendar, and that includes a few museum shows. So I'm trying to kind of go ahead and, you know, be on top of those first, even though everything is a little precarious right now.
Yeah. So main focus is just things that you can do once the doors open again, whenever that is.
Yeah, yeah.
I did see that online, so that some of the artists are included at a show at the YBCA.
That is also something that is fortunately kind of on hold right now, except that the show is installed. So hopefully when the curve goes down, we'll be able to actually see it. But so if you're unaware, 2020 is a census year.
Oh, that's
and,
right.
Yeah, and it's a big deal actually in San Francisco because there is a huge campaign from this collective called Arts in Action, and we've been approached by them a couple months ago actually, and we decided to collaborate with them on multiple levels, including a big campaign for a marketing campaign, let's say, for the city. That being said, YVCA also partnered with them to create this show called Come to Your Senses. And it's a big group show with mostly local artists. And we have, I think, six artists from Creativity Explored, seven included in the show. It's a huge show about like why you matter and why, you know, people should be counted in a more kind of conceptual way, obviously. But it's a real buzz bummer as well because I was really, really much looking forward to this show. Martin Strickland, who I go, as you know, since we also went to grad school with him.
That's right.
Is the curator of the show and has done an amazing job curating some of the pieces of the studio and really kind of trying to diversify mediums and showcasing really interesting work. So as everything else, I'm a little bummed that no one is currently able to see it, but
yeah.
Hopefully soon.
Yeah. And I heard, I plan on trying to get him on here too, to talk about it. Cause I did see on Instagram that they were still in in the first few days of the shutdown, quickly trying to finish that install before mm-hmm. everybody had to go home.
Yeah.
So they were like maybe like running on like a like a skeleton crew of people trying to get it to get it wrapped up real quick.
Yeah, I mean, they did an incredible kudos to him and Sarah Gathers, actually, from YBCA, because they did an incredible job even pulling this exhibition together in a very short period of time, and putting an exhibition together like this in the main gallery at YBCA, a huge space, is not an easy thing to do. And I think they did it in like a couple months. So yeah, it was pretty impressive to witness, for sure.
Yeah. I think the last part is, I guess, just checking in overall, how are you feeling, you know? how is this, you know, because as I, you know, I'm in my bedroom right now doing this podcast, and usually, you know, so, and it took me, you know, we're now week four, right, of the shutdown, but,
yeah,
you know, I had just released a new podcast episode before the week before we had to stay in, and for 3 weeks I was just kind of like, holy crap, like I had all these interviews that I wanted to do and lined up, and I now I can't do them, and I have to, like, it took me a while to stop being down on myself and then trying to figure out an alternative. But I wonder with you, like, how did this, you know, how are you doing throughout all of this?
Well, I'm okay. I think everybody is on the same boat, which in a weird way is a little reassuring for me. I have conversation with my family and friends in France, and we're going through the exact same shit. So I cherish that, because I feel like there is a unity in that situation that, you know, the entire world is going through.
Right.
But I'm also looking forward to hear this interview in a couple of months and be like, wow, this was so weird. Remember when we're stuck inside for like 3 months?
I'm sure that the first thing you're doing is going to take a trip to France, right? To see your family.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's for sure. Like that actually has been the hardest.
Yeah.
To be honest, to not being able to, you know, check on my family or friends, and kind of being stuck here for real, because, you know, airports are kind of shut down. There's only, I think, one flight for France there per week or so, and I think it's leaving from LA.
Yeah.
It's very limited. And so if something that happens, this is when you realize that, this is when I realized at least that I was living 8,000 miles away from my family. It's something that I don't always think about, but that really hit me hard. But again, I think I've been telling this to myself, and I'm lucky that I have a home, that I have, you know, a place to shelter in, and I miss having a garden, but...
And you still have a job.
And still have a job. I mean, seriously, it's incredible.
Like,
I'm on the lucky end, so I really don't have anything to complain about compared to many other people.
Yeah, and especially with the arts community, you know, we keep hearing stories of furloughs and, you know, people getting laid off and whatnot. You know, the art world is kind of one of those that take a big hit during a recession, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I will be, like, also praising Creativity Export for this. They have been committed from the beginning to, like give like no one left behind situation, where we try to find work for people that don't necessarily have it at first, you know, and we're hoping that no one will be fired or furloughed. And I think this is also kind of a mentality that, you know, institutions try to adopt. It's like, oh, you're SF MoMA and you have all this money and somehow you're furloughing your employees.
Yeah.
It feels a little extreme. And everybody has to contribute their part in those times. And I think this is kind of where the true colors of people, institutions, and organizations really become clear. It's like when you're in a situation that is so precarious, potentially dangerous, that you can see what people are truly made of.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thanks for coming on. I know I'll let you go in a little bit. But it was great catching up with you. Hopefully next time we see each other, it's at a bar.
I really, really hope so too.
Oh man.
I know, but it was nice chatting with you. Thank you for having me from your bed.
No problem. All right.
I'll talk to you soon, hopefully.
Okay. That's it for today. Thanks for listening, and thanks again to Clea for coming on. To learn more about Creativity Explored, visit their website, creativityexplored.com. You can also check out Boston Reiner Gallery on Instagram to see what they're doing during the quarantine. Also, be sure to check out the podcast website at artscenepc.com, and you can check us out on Instagram at artscenepc. Till next time, everyone.